Hey, everybody, and welcome to Pittsburgh Comics Podcast number 237. I'm Dave, filling in for Colin McMahon, the owner and proprietor of Pittsburgh Comics.
That's how he used to start it.
Owner and proprietor?
Owner and proprietor. Yeah, if you go back a few, you'd see that.
Sounds more official if he's proprietor. If I could
he'd disagree, but I'm fairly sure that's what he used to say.
Well, he can correct that next week if he's not the
proprietor.
I'm the shopkeeper here at Pittsburgh Comics.
Colin is at, what is it, the Diamond,
Diamond Retailers
Summit Comic-Con. In Baltimore.
Isn't it at Baltimore Comic-Con?
Comic-Con starts Saturday.
Okay.
Or it starts Friday.
I think it's like kind of separate, but it's still going on, so they kind of...
Yeah, it's set up that they lead into one another, but they are separate events.
He was going to try to go to a little bit of the con, but there's not a lot of time in between.
Con!
Something awesome? Oh, yeah!
Mm-hmm. And at this exact moment, Colin is at the Baltimore Orioles baseball game.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
The Toronto Maple Leafs. Got hockey on my mind.
That would be a very different
Did you ever see basketball?
I saw basketball.
The Toronto Blue Jays.
It was football and baseball were combined instead.
According to the internet.
Well, at the very beginning when they were talking about, you know, how they tried to increase fan attendance, and it was the guy was going to
Well, according to the internet, the Blue Jays are winning 3-0.
Oh, okay.
Second inning. So, but
more like the Boo Jays.
With us tonight are
Josh,
Pat,
Adam.
Okay.
Dave's ruling this thing with an iron fist, man. He's like,
he's on it.
Today with us are
I'm trying to
enough of that talk.
Emote here. So, we apologize for Colin's absence.
I don't apologize for his absence.
His rant.
He should be apologizing for his absence.
I didn't make him leave.
Okay. And you know, here's the worst part. You know when he puts this up, he's going to say, don't hold me responsible for anything they say.
Yeah.
So, you need to go, like, really off the rails.
Okay.
Yeah. He is responsible, though. He lets Adam have a key so he can be here to do the podcast when he's not here. So, he is responsible
for
it.
That is true,
We're not going to have a rant or anything from Colin, unfortunately.
He has two rants ready to go.
For next
season?
He's too busy hobnobbing with Dan DiDio right now.
Yeah.
That's true.
He was telling us he already ran into him. Dan DiDio recognized him, said hi.
And then he walked away, and he was just like,
who's that guy?
I hate that guy. He's like, all those comic shop guys look alike.
Nerds.
Then he got pants, you know. Just
threw a slushy in his face.
What a fun time. I'm sure he's having.
Yep.
So well, not we could go to the. Rating. We could start as always with Pat's news, so Pat can take over from here. Was there any news, Pat?
Yes, there was. Well, did I not react quick enough for you?
Was there news, Pat?
Yeah, that's what Colin always said. Was there any news?
Simmer down, Dave.
You're about to lose the range here.
Yeah. Okay.
You're gonna have a mutiny on you. Say it. So there was some DC exclusives this week. Liam Sharp. That was the first one. I think that was announced last Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
And then Otto Schmidt and Robson Rocha are now all exclusive to DC.
Yeah, Otto Schmidt has been on Green Arrow Rebirth along with Juan Freya and Benjamin Percy. And Robson Rocha is on Green Lanterns, I believe. Yes, yeah. Green Lanterns.
And then Liam Sharp is on Wonder Woman.
Wonder Woman, yeah.
Yeah. So DC is trying to tie down some talent for the foreseeable future, it looks like.
Names that we know, too.
Yeah,
like, I'm really happy to see this, because I don't recall this many exclusive signings during the New 52 relaunch. But it did feel like Marvel was constantly signing people over from DC during that time period, so it's nice to see DC locking in, like, solid, you know, current talent.
Yeah.
Deathstroke So, I don't know if any of you guys see this, but a video kind of popped up.
Yeah, like the camera test.
Yeah, for Deathstroke to make an appearance in the DCEU, although it you know, some people said he's going to be the main villain in The Batman. Others said he may make a cameo in Justice League or whatever, who knows. The costume does look pretty cool. I'll give it that. And Deathstroke is a good villain for Batman. I think the problem with it, though, now is Manu Bennett, who played him in Arrow, I think did such a good job.
Yeah.
That's who he's going to be compared to automatically, and I think that'll hurt.
It's been a while since we've seen that character, though.
And by the time the Batman movie comes out, that's going to be a few years down the road.
But it's like, you know, automatically, as soon as they announced Jared Leto as the Joker, everybody, well, you know, how's he going to do compared to Heath Ledger or Jack Nicholson?
I think Joker's a tough one because Joker has been portrayed so many times.
Yeah, but I mean,
but that's just
even with The Flash, people are going to be comparing to Grant Gustin's Flash.
I agree, and that's why I thought it was a big mistake to make him Barry Allen. They should have made him Wally West.
Yeah.
But, you know, no one listens to what I have to say.
Correct.
Obviously. That's why they're listening to the podcast saying, can we fast forward here?
They're not asking. They're actually trying
to do it. Yeah.
They've already fast forward.
There's a skip this? 30 seconds ahead button.
Yeah. No, but I mean, there's, you know, Batman has a big enough rogues gallery. They could have had villains that we haven't seen on film before without a problem. You know,
Mad Hatter.
Mad Hatter's the one I was thinking of. Clayface would be a cool one, especially with the way visual effects are now. Yeah. And the fact that he can be anyone.
It makes it expensive, though.
It does, but so what?
I think when they're wanting to do a Batman villain,
they haven't had a huge hit on their hands.
But that's just it. If you do Clayface, yes, you have the visual effects problems, which I understand, but you can make it more of a detective story and less of an action set piece thing. So you're saving money on explosions. Instead, you can dump it into what you do with Clayface. Plus, it allows you to bring in different actors to play different aspects of Clayface. Mm-hmm. So, I
think sometimes with a Batman villain in a movie, they're wanting somebody who could be like a mastermind behind something. And I think that's why sometimes they don't choose characters like that. Like, I could see Mad Hatter.
Yeah, Mad Hatter would work that real well.
Clayface, I could see, but not as that kind of role.
No, he's more of the
Hush.
Yeah, Hush would be great.
I think Hush would have been their best choice.
Yeah.
Just because of what they're doing with Batman, how it's taking place a little bit into the Batman story already.
Yes and no. If they wanted to do Hush, they could have left out all the origin stuff out of Batman vs. Superman. That would be the place to explore it because he does tie back to the early days, you know, when he was a kid.
And you wouldn't want to do that in the first movie because that's the biggest complaint people have been having.
Well, no, but if they did it that way, it would work. Because, remember, Hush is jealous that Bruce now gets to be alone because his parents were killed.
Yeah.
So you can address it.
So you're
that
saying
there
would be more of a purpose to have it in there
exactly
for the story.
Yeah. Rather than just showing it to show it. Although, you know, I love the fact that it was Maggie from The Walking Dead getting shot.
I think it is a big problem. Do you not
understand your hate for her?
I know it's illogical, but it's just there. It is what it is.
Okay.
I think we're going to have Red Hood in these movies eventually. I think that's why the only reason why they bring it up.
Yeah. Black Mask would be another good one that they could do. For more of a...
I like that character, but they some of these in the comics, they've kind of messed him up. Like, New 52, they brought him out. He was, like, a character who could, like, hypnotize people with his mind. Like, he had psychic powers because of his mask. And I was like, that's dumb. Like, I liked him as, like, a crime lord.
Yeah, that's how I would handle him, as more of a crime lord.
Zazz would fit the dark tone.
Yeah.
Yeah. But even there, Zazz, I don't think, works as the mastermind. He works as the, you know, the henchman.
Zazz isn't the mastermind, but Zazz is a, you know, force.
Right. Zazz would work well as, like, an enforcer for Black Mask.
Well, no, but, I mean, if you don't necessarily have to have this big, you know, overarching mastermind could just be this, you know, person who is wreaking havoc, chaotically.
And he's trying to figure out, who's doing it.
Or the other thing you do is if, because you have Ben Affleck, you're going to do 3 Batman movies anyway. Maybe you don't even show the mastermind. Maybe you use Calendar Man or something like that.
Well, I was just going to say that. If we got a long Halloween movie, I would be the happiest person ever.
We're ignoring the biggest thing here, though. Which villain does Matt Damon look like? Or is Matt Damon going to be Red Hood?
He might be a little old to pull off the red hood.
Wouldn't
that be funny if he was? Wow, that would dye
his hair black.
It was a previous sidekick that he had. Yeah. You know, it was Matt Damon,
or Matt Damon's Dick Grayson.
Yeah, just dye his hair black and go from there.
Although you have to in order to be a Batman sidekick. You have to dye your hair. Yeah, that was the whole Grant Morrison thing with Jason Todd.
Right,
he dyed his hair. His hair was red.
Right.
And then he dyed it. And I was just like, that's dumb. And then they never went back to that. Ever.
Because it was dumb.
It was dumb.
What do you think about that, Dave?
I'd like to see the Riddler in one of these movies. We've never seen like a real modern version of the Riddler in any of the Christopher Nolan movies or these new...
Because that was always a rumor.
Remember all those rumors about...
Johnny Depp. I've heard Johnny Depp.
Johnny Depp was they talked about...
For a long time.
For a long time.
Who were you thinking?
You said Johnny Depp, and I forgot now.
Paul Bettany was another one that they talked about. And I would have liked to have seen that. But I think the problem with the Riddler is you have him on Gotham.
Yeah.
That guy's really good.
He is really good.
He's good.
And then the other problem you have is...
Robin Williams.
Jim Carrey.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
He was supposed to be him back when...
Tim Burton was there.
Yeah, when Tim Burton was going to bring him in.
Yeah.
And then even when, instead of Jim Carrey,
it
was going to be Robin Williams.
Well, Jim Carrey was decided after...
Robin Williams got pissed off at Warner Brothers because he was used as leverage to get Jack Nicholson to play the Joker. Mm. So that's... He said he would never do a Warner Brothers movie until they publicly apologized to him.
But I thought even during the Nolan movies,
I think it was brought back up.
I thought
he said things about wanting to play the Riddler at that point.
Mm-hmm. No, but I think he was talking about back when it was, and actually I think it was Schumacher did that one.
Yeah,
because it was.
I remember hearing rumors that Anthony Michael Hall was going to play the Riddler whenever he was cast for the.
Well, that was rumored when he was brought in.
When he
was
just brought in, he was just a newscaster,
Well, and then the other guy was Mr. Reese, and they said, oh, it sounds a little too much like Mr. Reese, it must be the Riddler.
I love how people, the internet, they just put everything together until it makes sense. Yeah. And it's just like, you took a bunch of things, put it together, anything's going to make sense. I didn't dislike Jim Carrey. I think Jim Carrey as the Joker at that time. Worked for Riddler. That time.
Well, no, Riddler, but he's exactly right. That was the problem, is he tried to play it a little too much. Not as bad as Tommy Lee Jones did.
Yeah,
Tommy was pretty bad.
Yeah.
Well, Carrey as the Riddler wasn't bad. Tommy Lee Jones was... Tommy Jones could have been fine fine as being cast as Two-Face, but the direction, the way they did it, was weird.
They made him kind of... He had really no purpose in that movie, if you think about it. Just being this crazy guy. That was all.
Mm-hmm.
There was nothing really about the split personality at all. I mean, they played it up that, he had two sides, but not really so much.
Right, but not so much a split personality and the true conflict.
Yeah, Drew Barrymore and was the other girl?
I can't remember now. Yeah, she was the angel and the other one was like the devil.
Mm-hmm.
But at least Jim Carrey was coming off as like a character. He was playing, that character, but Tommy Lee Jones didn't in that. But
you're right though. If they use like the new 52 zero year version of the Riddler, that's a very formidable, villain from the mental aspect. Yeah. Then you just have to bring someone else in to be kind of the physical force,
mm-hmm.
and that could be where you get a Clayface or Killer Croc. I would love to see more of Killer Croc because you didn't really get to see enough of him in Suicide Squad.
Yeah.
Maybe that's how he ended up in Belle Reve.
Something, yeah. I'm on board with this movie, but it's tough until I see like Wonder Woman come out. Because when Wonder Woman comes out, I'll have a little more faith in the DC movies. You know,
I don't.
You don't have faith in Wonder Woman?
Oh no, I have faith in Wonder Woman, but here's the problem: Wonder Woman was filmed before Johns even got promoted.
Oh, okay. So you think that might change the?
But he was more involved in the writing of Wonder Woman than other movies.
Right, but I mean, now he actually has a role where I think he can affect things. So like the Batman.
Yeah.
But even like Justice League was halfway filmed by the time that happened, and short of firing a Singer,
yeah,
there was really nothing Johns could have done. So that movie's
Singer,
gonna, or not Singer, Snyder.
Singer was super.
Well, yeah, I mean, no, Justice Singer, League, yeah. Early Superman. Justice League just started filming end of April or mid April. It started
right, but that's when Johns got promoted. He got promoted after. Batman vs. Superman came out.
Yeah,
he's been involved.
I would have a feeling he was probably doing the job already before they did the actual announcements and press release.
Yeah, but I'm wondering how much actual authority he had at that point over story, over creative. Because that's the other thing. If Snyder was in there, you know, unless DC said, or Warner Brothers said, yeah, you can overrule this guy.
But didn't they even, in the very beginning... they made Affleck a producer on it, and then they also make Johns a producer at the very
Batman vs. Superman?
No, Justice League, as filming started.
I don't remember, might have. But I think some of that, at least on Affleck's part, I think a lot of that was the smooth over ruffled feathers, because he wasn't happy about what happened with
Batman. But it wasn't an EP credit. I think he gets an actual producer.
Oh, I thought he was EP.
I could be wrong, but I thought it was producer.
Yeah, I'm not positive. I remember hearing that too, but didn't remember what it was for.
At the end of the day, though, Affleck is a good writer. I was nervous, but he killed it as Batman, so mm-hmm. I'm okay.
Yeah,
you know, I'm
in the weird comic section.
In the part that you get disturbed.
Now I'm back in the.
You know, somewhere in the middle, it gets kind of weird.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like once you in the Boundless section,
yeah.
There's a lot of crotch shots and yes. a lizard's tongue licking some girl's ass.
Well, I guess we got a title for the podcast. Yes.
This one has a nude variant.
All the Boundless ones do.
Sexy sluice nude variant. Blood play nude variant. Like this is. If you're a fan of this, I'm not judging, but it makes me feel awkward reading the previews.
Actually, they do advertising on CBR, and I read CBR on an iPad. Sometimes
they do it on Bleeding Cool too.
Okay, and it goes to their Kickstarter. Oh my God! Some of the stuff that they put in, I'm like,
I was on Bleeding Cool one day. Like Bleeding Cool, the big ads will be the banners on both sides.
Maybe that's what it is. Maybe both sides of the screen.
No, those are obnoxious.
They are obnoxious. But I'm sitting reading an article, and there's like this, you know, cave jungle girl's crotch staring down on the left side, and a boob shot over on the right side. I'm like, I feel
like I shouldn't
if
be.
If anyone were to look at my screen right now, I would feel embarrassed.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're just trying to read about comic books.
I'm just trying to read an article.
I'm reading it for the article.
Yeah.
They're all going to laugh at me.
Okay. So moving on.
I forgot we were still doing
it. Yeah, now we're still on news.
That was the longest news bullet point we've ever had.
One item so far.
There were no, two. There's a rumor that Marvel and ABC are developing a new Warriors show with Squirrel Girl.
But they can't handle the show they have now.
That was the weird thing. And what I read was
except for Agent Carter. That was pretty decent.
They're developing a show.
Shield's not as bad as Gotham.
Well, no.
No. But they're developing a show, but not to air on ABC.
Yeah, and their Netflix shows are fantastic.
Yeah. Well, I'm talking when he mentioned ABC, I was like, ABC can't handle what they have now.
Well, ABC is the studio, ABC Studios.
Oh, okay.
So that's not necessarily ABC.
I'm just confused because I don't think Squirrel Girl was ever a new warrior.
Well, they can make her a new warrior.
Yeah, I guess so.
And, you know,
apparently they are.
Because I think if they just called the...
She was really the one responsible for the first Civil War and Marvel Civil War.
Yeah.
Nah.
I could forgive it if she blew up Stanford or something.
Something with squirrels.
That's kind of messed up.
We're sticking all these squirrels on Connecticut.
Squirrel grenades.
Squirrel grenades. She has a utility belt, right? So I assume that's what's there.
Buy her comic or I'll rip your head off.
Oh.
Okay.
Terry Moore, Motor Girl. Just a girl and her gorilla and customers who are out of this world.
Huh.
Okay. Order now from Abstract Studio.
You said a commercial.
You may know Terry Moore's other work, Rachel Rising, which has a omnibus in the current previews. Tell your local Colin. You'd like to your local
Colin. And then finally, Fox hired some writers for their new Mutants movie. And it's the people that wrote Fault in Our Stars. Which, how hard is it to get someone that writes a comic book to write a comic book movie?
Writing a comic book and writing a comic movie are two different things.
Okay, but writing... Here, you wrote a movie about a girl with cancer. So, that qualifies you to write a New Mutants movie.
Just because they wrote a movie about a girl with cancer doesn't mean that you're not a fan of New Mutants also.
That they can't handle writing about.
Yeah, I'm this is Fox we're talking about.
I'm just saying, you can't say, you did this one thing, that's all you're qualified for.
No, you're right, those two things are not mutually exclusive. However, come a pause, that being able to write...
Did you say
comma
pause?
I did.
In that amount of time, you probably got to have the comma and the pause, I'm saying it.
I don't feel like it was actually a pause. It's like, comma pause.
Right, I didn't want to pause, but I wanted to show there was a pun. No, but their ability to write a teenage love story doesn't really make me think, okay, they can write
mutants
an X-Men
movie.
Mutants
are allowed to be in love, too.
Well, what
too.
I would say is that shouldn't be how they're promoting it. It shouldn't be like, and writing New Mutants, we have Fault in Our Stars.
You are correct. Those two.
You do this to us too, so.
I know. And it will continue.
As long as we're on the same page.
Yeah. No, it just, to me, that it seems like a weird choice. Because Fox has not had the best track record.
There'll be
with
a problem if
X-Men
it's
anyway.
The Fault in Our Mutants.
Fault in Our Mutants.
Why does Magic suddenly have cancer? What the hell?
I could say, well.
Warlock is really depressed.
She has.
Today.
Jean Grey has the Phoenix. And, I can see this work.
Masters number 15, new story arc.
Sometime next year, maybe, who knows.
That's all I got.
Oh.
Valiant!
What about Valiant?
There has been,
I traveled all week. I just got home at, 4 o'clock today, so I have not seen a whole lot of news. Because I just haven't been around.
Excuses. Or, like...
You better leave Dave alone.
Whoa! How'd Dave get brought into this?
The one rolling here with like an iron fist.
He simmered down since then.
I can't remember the actor's name, but the guy that played Deadshot on Arrow.
Okay.
He put out a tweet, a very vague tease about some upcoming project with Valiant. And Ninjak, and a picture of just his eyes with like it blacked out above him and below the eyes, making it seem like he might be playing some live action version of Ninjak.
I didn't know they were doing a Ninjak movie, I thought they were doing Bloodshot.
I'm getting there, Slappy.
Okay,
so
he's on it.
All right,
so he tagged Valiant and the Valiant CEO, Dinesh, in there, and they actually responded and retweeted things, and the CEO even tagged other people, and then it came to light that they're going to be announcing something that looks like New York Comic Con, but it seems like Valiant is going to be doing a online web series with a bunch of their characters, and it's going to... the people that the CEO tagged were this guy that played Deadshot. Again, I apologize, I can't remember his name. Also, dude, the Green Ranger.
Oh, Jason David Frank.
Yeah, Jason David Frank.
Yeah.
and a few other people, but it's kind of surprising to see that, you know, they're exploring this, you know, doing some sort of show, like internet show.
Yeah, because I thought they were doing movies.
They are. So I really didn't expect to see they were going to do a web series, especially with main characters like Ninjak. But I'm excited to see what they actually announce at Comic-Con. It's still very, you know, tease-ish, yeah. But
that's definitely kind of kind of cool.
Threw me for a loop.
Michael Rowe.
Michael Rowe
is the actor's name.
Thank you. Adam on the spot.
I was on it.
IMDb on the spot.
Then underneath there it says, Arrow Deadshot actor to play Ninjak and Valiant comic web series.
Wow. There we go.
And it says underneath source Josh.
Oh, okay.
Confirmed. They are on it.
Confirmed by Adam.
There we go. That's pretty cool, though.
It is.
So they'll have it, like, how did they do that? Like, on their website, like, web series?
I don't know. It hasn't been any details about it, really.
That's why I said I'm on board. Comic-Con.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, Dinesh put, you know, hashtag NYCC, so it makes it seem like that's where they're going to announce whatever.
Let us know more.
Is that guy British?
Dinesh? Or Michael Rowe?
Michael Rowe.
I think he's, I think he's American.
So,
yeah, but
ninja. Yeah, I was going to say, I don't take him as exactly the martial arts ninja type.
He could probably play it. I mean, I didn't think much about the girl from S.H.I.E.L.D. who went over to Preacher, but...
The flower girl. Whatever her face is. Raina.
Whatever her face is.
Well, no, because I remember she got turned into, like, the lizard the
spikies,
chick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In S.H.I.E.L.D., I thought she was a mediocre actress, because it's the writing.
Yeah, well, that's...
But in Preacher, she's fantastic.
Okay.
He's Canadian.
That's close to British.
Close enough.
They got the same monarch, it's the same.
It's all, yeah.
It's part of the Commonwealth, so you're all right.
That's cool, though. It is cool news.
All right, let's keep it moving, then. We're rolling with an iron fist here.
What'd you read, Dave? Because we got to interrupt you.
No more hot snows.
Oh, look at that. That just stole your thunder and struck you with it.
Dave throws something at you. You're like,
okay, we'll start with what we read. I will start since Pat so nicely asked me to.
I hope he asked nicely.
I don't think I asked nicely.
Being sarcastic. Yeah, there was a little bit of sarcasm.
Okay, we'll start with Archie, number 11.
Yeah, I read it. It was a book.
That could, huh?
It was fine.
It was a fun book. Follow up to last...
A lot of haters over here.
Last follow up to last month's issue of Veronica Archie? And Archie driving away Mr. Collier, who's running for the mayoral race against Mr. Lodge.
Yeah.
And this is kind of we get the beginnings of the Archie singing group in this issue.
Yep.
As Veronica decides to start her own band because she wants to enter the Riverdale High Talent Contest. She thinks winning that will get everybody on her side again.
Mm-hmm. And Lodge is running... Though he's wanting to make Riverdale great again.
He does want to make Riverdale great again. I thought it's always been great, of course, but...
I think it's supposed to be, like, the greatest community ever created. Like, there's never anything wrong there.
Well, Veronica forms her band, the Veronicas, and then Betty hears about this, and she forms her own band, Betty and the Waves. Mm-hmm. I thought it was funny. They have this few... You know, 4 or 5 pages at the beginning, they did those gags.
Yeah,
like those
they did like
those classic four panel Archie gags with the rhyming titles.
Yeah,
Shriek Freak, Percussion Discussion. I thought that was really funny.
Every like
laughing.
Two panels, they had one. Yeah, they changed.
And the story's like continuing, but I thought that was great.
I think they had a different artist on the book this time because it started when it first started off. While looking at it, I was like, "This doesn't look like the same."
Someone
art.
Did. Breakdowns and someone did finishes in the pencils.
Yeah, there's expressions now for the expressions.
Yeah, but it's the expression
Yeah, did you see the expression?
Big self? No.
That one right there.
Yeah, he's all...
I'm looking in the previews, Cal, that just came out, and there's a Batman in the animated series, Batman Expressions Pack, and one of the faces, his mouth is just fully open with teeth, and it looks like he's
in shock.
Going, rah!
That's the only way to explain it.
I can't think of a way to describe it.
My favorite thing in the previews catalog this time is, and we just interrupted Dave, but my favorite thing.
Oh, I actually think you were talking whenever I started.
That's okay, then. Is the Wampa skin rug. Did you see that?
I must have missed
where
it.
When you were pointing out the Star Trek emblem.
Yeah.
It was beside it.
Oh, I was too focused on the Star
Trek. You were on that, so that's why you didn't.
They had a Star Trek Bluetooth
But I can only think of one person that comes here that is going to have
a Wampa skin
somebody
rug.
Order a Wampa skin rug.
For sexy time?
He's going to have all of it, yeah. You know who it is.
I only know it myself, but I always like, you ever see the Tauntaun sleeping bag?
Yes. I love that.
Give that guy a gold star, whoever invented that.
It's the only way to keep warm on Hoth.
Yeah. And I thought they smelled bad on the outside.
The sleeping bag smells that bad.
You're supposed to wash it, Adam. Jeez.
Oh. Wash a Tauntaun. Okay. So, yeah. So, Archie, they're preparing for this talent show. And they formed their bands, and I guess, how were the bands, too? It was like, Archie was with Veronica, Jughead,
and
somebody else.
Betty has Moose.
I think Moose was one of them.
Yeah. Dilton. I think it's the first time we've seen Dilton. And Saeed.
Maybe.
Not from Lost.
No, not from Lost.
Another
Saeed. It would be funny if it was Saeed from Lost. No, it was Saeed is Betty's new boyfriend. And, they're practicing. Not any of them sound like they're any good. Veronica is... Veronica can only sing if she's looking at Archie. If he disappears, she, like, gets out of tune. Isn't that awesome?
Yeah.
You're not supposed to be looking
at
that.
I always see one person sitting on that.
This previous catalog has that sort of stuff mixed
throughout
through.
It. I know.
They found a new tactic.
They're going for their talent show and trying to. I don't really. The whole thing about the book that kind of was odd was their plan was to bring back that Mr. Collier guy, and as a teacher who left town because of Lodge running him out of town because he was running against him for mayor. But somehow, by winning a talent show, this solved everything.
No, I think Veronica's more... She's more interested in gain a reputation back and get everybody to like her. So I think that's why she's in it.
Yeah. That was mainly her thing, but... then they just don't get along, or the whole band thing just goes crazy. They're cheering for everybody. The sides are all divided between Lodge and Collier, and Betty and Archie kind of give up. They go outside, they talk, and they want to be friends again. But Veronica and Saeed see this, and they take it as it's something else.
Trouble's brewing again.
So. It's a good book. Archie's a good book. It's more, there's a lot of drama behind this one, a little more than the other ones, where Jughead is kind of fun to read. This one has a little bit of this, they're still talking about this lipstick incident, which is just like, but it's a fun story. It is, it's fun to read. It's just a light comic just to sit and you know, enjoy. But I think it's worth still picking up. I really do. I think they're doing a good job with these.
I agree.
I mean, it's not Afterlife with Archie. None of them being killed or anything like that. It's not as real as some of these Archie books.
They're making the characters as more real than they have.
They're making them fun, but they're trying to modernize it. So, but yeah.
Okay. Next, interested to see what you guys have to say about Wacky Raceland, number 3.
Is it wacky?
I was not a fan.
No.
Okay.
I thought it was okay.
I feel like there's no plan with these books.
Yeah, it's...
Yeah, and that's what it felt like.
I feel like they had it, but it's... Maybe there is a plan, but it's kind of disjointed. And it doesn't... It just is like, why? Why is... You know, it's almost... Sometimes I feel like we're missed something. Like, I'll read this issue, and I'm like, what did I miss here? What are they doing? Are they still racing? Are they... Well,
yeah, and that was the thing. So, like, in this specific issue that, you know, they're in a race, Dick Dastardly and Penelope Pitstop get separated, and you know, they're
in Big Sur,
yeah,
which is now known as Poseidon's Toilet.
Yeah.
Yeah. But... While they're, and I don't remember who it was, but they were arguing over the existence of a god, and like, I mean, it got very existential for a minute there.
Yeah.
And then the announcer tells them, you know, I guess there's some stipulation. They can't let each other die. They have to try to help each other. And
which I had no idea about.
But that doesn't seem like that even makes sense, because you think, you know, in the original Wacky Racers, they would do things to kind of... Not to kill each other. I mean, that'd be kind of dark for a children's cartoon. But in this more modern...
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to say realistic, but gritty retelling of it, it would seem killing each other would be perfectly legal.
It didn't make any sense because the announcer is like... First of all, I don't know what the announcer is, but he has a little more power than you'd expect. Because he was able to create, like, a flood. And I was just like, well, how's he able to do that on the planet?
He made all the cars sentient.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, but still, this part, it almost makes me think they're in, like, a virtual reality or something like that. Maybe they're plugged into something like
the last issue, it's going to be Muttley, but the cartoon Muttley.
Yeah, they're in there, and But, yeah, it just...
That might be good, actually.
Like, they don't...
If I just gave away the ending, I'm going to be...
Yeah.
I hope that happens now.
I just... Yeah, that guy, the announcer, seems too powerful. Then what was his point of doing that? If it was going to separate everybody, they'd be like, you can't complete the race until you save everybody. It's just like, well, everybody has to be here?
Well, but that seems to be the other problem. If these are these checkpoints, or are these... I don't want to say mini races, but mini races is part of the bigger race. Wouldn't you think that whoever comes in last would be eliminated or something?
See,
like?
That's okay. The first issue, I thought that's what it was. Because it seemed like, okay, whoever doesn't win is eliminated forever.
Well, no, whoever doesn't win, because only one person's going to win.
Oh, yeah. Whoever comes in last
gets eliminated.
Whoever comes in last gets eliminated from the thing. And I thought it was a contest that only one person could get what they wanted in the end.
Yes, that's the way.
Now, in the second issue, it made it more, I believe, that...
If you complete the race...
Yeah. If you complete it, you move on. If you don't, then you... I don't know. But it seemed like everybody was completing it.
Well, and even there, if it's whoever completes it gets what they want, why would the rules be you can't stop other people
from completing? Yeah, so if somebody... So the announcer creates this whole water thing that takes Penelope and Dick Dastardly out of the race, and then he's just like, well, you can't let them die. You have to go get them. It's just like, okay, so...
Yeah.
Now they have to stop, so nobody's ever going to win this race.
Well, and not only that.
There's nothing that stops anything. So now in this issue, I take it as they're all going to get what they want as long as they run this course. Like, they all... like
they have to learn to work together, and then they get a prize.
That's it. Because I think what basically in this issue, what they said was he has, like, a death course. And if everybody survives the death course, you'll get everybody here gets what they want.
I think it was one of the Saw movies that was the case, where had they just not killed anybody, they all would have made it out.
Yeah.
But as they started to kill each other off, it just made it harder, maybe at this point. It was like, Cube was the same way. The way to get out of the house was just not to leave the room you're in.
Yeah. But it just... I don't think there's a good explanation of what's going on here. And that's why I said something's missing. Like, I think the whole thing is the idea is a good idea. I think. I just don't think they're implementing this very well.
Yeah.
I think that they have a good idea with these characters that they can do something with. It's just somewhere along the line they didn't explain it all. Second, we didn't get a really good description of, like, that backup, I think, helped in the first issue telling us
who these people
who
were.
Everybody was.
Yeah.
In this case, now every issue is telling everybody who it is. Same goes for Future Quest. Future Quest is doing that, where it's just like, okay, now we got an origin story. Why didn't we get a backup in their big Future Quest book of characters that we didn't know? You know, when somebody shows up, we're like, who's this Hanna-Barbera character? Has it? They're assuming too much that you know who these people are, and you don't. Or we're assuming that this new way that you know, it's even worse, this new way that DC is writing them, that we know who they are. Well, we don't know who these characters they're making them out to be. So I think, I just think they have, like, the Hanna-Barbera stuff is such a good idea. I don't think it's horrible, these stories.
I just
don't think they're doing it very well. Yeah.
Tighten up what you're doing.
Exactly. So, Wacky Raceland. It's wacky. Yeah. It's a race and there's land.
There's mostly some water in this issue.
A lot in this one, yeah. I know, I wouldn't want to drink it, according to...
Well, there's those mutant crabs and...
Yeah, what...
in there.
First of all, I want to kind of know what kind of apocalypse this is. Because, like, in the Dick Dastardly issue, that second issue, they were just like, it's a bunch of, like...
Like
robots.
Yeah.
Like,
robotic locusts of some sort, yeah. And then in this, like, there's, like, mutant crabs...
Penelope. Maybe it's the same world as Scooby Apocalypse.
I see. I thought that too because there was a lot of that with the there were nanites and, but I don't know. That would be cool though. That would be really cool. I still wonder if it's virtual reality.
They got to save Scooby.
Yes.
Well, you remember, Scooby's the announcer.
You remember the Scrappy first dude, issue? Maybe. This all might read out pretty well though in a trade. Maybe I don't know.
Yeah.
But like in the first issue, whenever. I think it was Penelope. She gets taken out by that wave, and then all of a sudden things go black, and then the car becomes sentient. Sure. And
I think that's the thing.
I still think it's virtual reality.
I think initially the plan was for it to be an ongoing, and then I think cooler heads prevailed and said this would work better as a limited series. Yeah. Just write it that way.
Yeah.
Because
that might screw
eventually
up
you have to. You have to end the race.
Yeah. It might screw up the book as much as it probably could have helped it. Because now they're writing it as with an ending. I don't think they had one. So now I think they're going to try to rush it to have an ending. So I think it might make it even worse. But I still don't think it should be an ongoing. I think it should have been a mini. So I think they kind of just screwed up right from the beginning with this one. But we'll see. I mean, it might tie together really nicely. Who knows? But I just don't see it.
Okay. Next book, talk about Star Wars, number 22.
That Star Wars I'm behind on. But you can go ahead.
This is, I guess, the start of a new story. It's mostly a space battle at the beginning.
Star War?
Okay. It's mostly a Star War at the beginning of this. In this issue, as the Rebels are taking on the Star Destroyer Harbinger, and they end up stealing a Star Destroyer.
How does somebody steal a Star Destroyer?
That's what I'm wondering, because they
left the keys in it.
The keys.
They're focusing their fire. The X-Wings are focusing their fire on the reactor, and... They blow a hole there, and then
it's
Luke
got like a lucky rabbit's foot
Luke
on
drives his X-wing. Luke drives his X-wing, flies his X-wing into the Star Destroyer, and then Millennium Falcon flies in there also. And then there's an explode. And meanwhile, this is going on. All the Imperial officers are abandoning ship in their shuttles, and then there's an explosion. So they all think the Harbinger blew up. But, no, the Rebels stole it and went to the far side of the galaxy and are hiding out with a skeleton crew on board the Harbinger.
Huh. It would be a womp rat paw, by the way. It wouldn't be a rabbit's paw.
Yeah, that's right. It would be a womp rat.
And then Luke had to go to the Tosche station to pick up some power converters.
Have some power converters, Uncle Owen. He
never So got I don't know. I don't never know exactly got. How... How they could get away with that?
How they could get rid of
How they could even explode? How can they? How could there be
a cop car?
How could there be an explosion? It looked like it blew up a Star Destroyer, but they still were able to get away with it.
I don't know. But there's some stormtrooper out in space who's just scratching his head like, how did this?
Yeah.
No, you know who you got to feel bad for though is whoever the commander was of that ship. Like,
You know what? That's why because they have a scene like that because they have the commander in a shuttle with somebody else, and he says, "Just give me your gun right now."
Yeah,
you know, and he does
because
he's not going to face.
That commander's just like Vader. Nobody turn on any televisions. Yeah.
Oh, look, he can't see me coming out of light speed too early. I lost the ship.
Yeah, that's right. I know.
Okay. So how is it though? How was that story though?
Just meh. Just meh. Especially the art.
That's my big thing with Star Wars.
Art was a little rough because the same guy drew the previous issue, which was all stormtroopers.
Yeah.
So he didn't have to draw any faces. So the faces were the facial. Guy. Expressions were kind of rough in this.
What I'd like this book to become, not so much
you'd
just
like
a Luke Leia story.
Know.
Well, yeah, but I don't want it to become a Luke Leia and all that story taking place at Star. I want it to be like almost like a bunch of minis in this that they just tell like Star Wars stories that you can have like the Obi-Wan Kenobi stuff. Like, what was he doing on Tatooine?
Yeah.
That's more of an anthology. Yeah.
I think that would be, like, a little more interesting. Even go back in the past,
You couldn't have called it Star Wars. You would have had to call it, like, a Star Wars anthology or Stories of the Cantina or something like that.
That's a good title.
Yeah, there used to be a Dark Horse book, Star Wars Tales, that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Moss Eisley Tales or something like that.
I just feel like that would be more interesting stories. reading stories about Star Wars, getting
kind of antsy with just focusing on
because I really did. I really like those Obi-Wan Kenobi stories.
Yeah.
Star Wars.
Actually. Yeah,
that was the best thing that came out of that book.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, they can't all be Lando, Poe Dameron.
That Lando book is the only Star Wars book that I bought the first one of and continued.
Yeah.
Really?
It was good.
That's a lie. I did buy the one that came up before The Force Awakens. Where they were finding
all Shattered Empire.
They were after the tree.
Yeah. Shattered Empire.
Journey to the Force Awakens.
Journey to the Force.
Meh.
Yeah. That was pretty bad.
What else you got?
Okay. Two other ones you guys didn't read. But The Revisionist, number 3, from Aftershock. This is about a time-traveling assassin. And when in the first and the 3 pages, we understand what's going on. This guy, Martin, has been getting information from his father, who's like a hologram. And he says, his father tells him that he invented time travel. And when Martin was a kid, and he traveled, did some traveling around the timeline, and went to the end of the timeline, it's called the station at the end of time, and while he was there, they told him he has to stay here, because you can't disrupt the timeline like you're doing. But he's not the only one, he finds out he's not the only one to discover how to time travel, and these other people are doing it. So he's tasks his son Martin with finding these people throughout the timeline and killing them, because they're becoming, as they travel, there's this energy is being stored within them. They're becoming like bombs, and they're afraid, you know, they're going to explode and destroy time. So in this story, he finds out, he goes to Chicago in 1980, and his father tells him he has to kill this lady who's the first female to run for president. Mm. And she's one of these wacky time travelers. Mm. So it's a cool book. There's a lot of cool ideas in this. And interested to see where it goes. The other one I'll mention is, I don't think I've talked about before, is ROM. Mm. ROM number 2 from IDW.
Space Knight.
ROM Space Knight.
Didn't ROM go into an event, like, early on? I saw it on the banner.
It's issue number 2.
Yeah. It's only the second issue, so.
Yeah, but I saw that, look, the banner, it was part of this
event. Yeah, this is the, I guess this is the start, or at least they've start, of Revolution, which is just the melding of their toy properties. ROM, Micronauts, G.I. Joe, Transformers.
Mask. Turtles.
Mask. I don't think Turtles are involved. So we get, there's just a couple panels in here with the G.I. Joe people. They, ROM is hunting the Dire Wraiths on Earth. They've completely taken over this one town. And he rescues this, doesn't rescue her, but finds this girl, I think her name Darby, and who's...
Colin just texted me, literally asking, is Dave talking?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, he texted me too.
Just tell him to enjoy the game. Well, let me keep talking as Colin is interrupting me via all the texts.
Even though we're all looking at our phones, looking at it right now.
That's why I didn't give him my phone number. The Dire Wraiths have taken over all the people in this town.
Give a bad face. There we go. Roll back up.
We're sending a text message of my perturbed face to Colin, apparently.
Other people's kids, I swear to God.
I give up. I'm done.
It was Ron, there was Space Knight stuff.
It was Ron, there's Space Knight stuff. G.I. Joe's in it.
How is it, though? How's it playing? Like, is it... It's, I know, just, Micronauts, I didn't think... For me, it didn't start very good. I just wasn't...
Yeah, it's just all right. It's just all right. It's okay. Nothing great.
And yet. It was kind of late from the free comic book day issue.
Yeah.
It took a while for
that. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and it also, there was a big delay between issues, wasn't there? It was like 3 months in between issues.
From what?
One didn't come out last month.
Huh.
I'd have to check that.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
I thought it came out a couple months ago.
I can't say. Okay.
He says sorry.
We'll go. Who wants to go next? As everybody's,
I can go.
You pick, Dave.
You want? Yeah, you pick.
Let's, okay, go ahead. We'll go around to Adam.
Okay. First, I'll start off with Blue Beetle Rebirth number 1.
Liked it more than I thought I would.
I did too. I was really surprised how much I liked this book. His relationship with Ted Kord is kind of interesting in this. That he is, you know, he doesn't like Ted. Very much like Ted.
Oh, Ted's not very likable. This Ted's kind of a douche.
He
kind of
just
he's like fanboying out on things.
And sometimes he looks at him as an experiment because he's interested in the scarab. But yeah, he calls him for the to deal with a situation somewhere, and he's just like, "I have school," and he's just like, "I'll write you a note or something," you know. It's just, he's not very, not a nice guy. Not the same kind of relationship between, like, Terry McGinnis and Bruce Wayne. Very different relationship.
Yeah.
But a very similar concept that he's, I feel like that's what they're going to do. Like, he's going to be, have his headquarters floating around the area when he's trying to deal with something. But I enjoyed it a lot more than I thought I was. The first panel, though, like, showed Ted coming down from the bug.
Yes.
But throughout the book, that never happened. So I thought that was a little odd. And maybe it'll happen later, but I thought it was that scene, though.
Well, I also found it odd that the end of it tied directly back into the original Rebirth.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting that.
I kind of either expected it to take place after Rebirth.
Yeah.
Or before. Completely before,
like, the only thing about that is that it kind of, they were kind of already a team anyways, like in the Rebirth book, and then having it start off as they're a team, and then it goes in. I'm fine with it. Like, it doesn't, didn't really bother me that they did it. I wasn't expecting it, though.
Well, it's, I guess I was it doesn't expecting matter to see the same how thing. The two of them kind of hooked up. But yeah. That, to me, would have been a better use of the Rebirth
of
book.
Of that, yeah.
Because I'm trying to think. Was Jaime in any of the New 52 books?
Yes. He had his own.
Really?
Yeah. Early on. Okay. He was on the first.
Okay. First wave. Okay. Because I never read it, so I'm thinking...
He ate his own, and he was in that Thrillbent series.
A Green Lantern book for a time, I thought. It was
that Thrillbent series, yeah.
Was that what it was called? Yeah.
Oh, that was the precursor to Lar Flees, that one?
Mm-hmm. Lar Flees had the backups in that. Yeah.
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 Okay. And then Ted Kord really didn't have anything in the New 52.
Reintroducing him would have been...
Right. And yeah. You got two not... necessarily well-known characters. And
ever since he was shot in the head by Max Lord, I didn't really know too much before that, like him returning. I mean, I'm sure he returned in
probably
Blackest Night.
Yeah.
But yeah, there wasn't really too much to say where he came from. Because we met his father in New 52 with before Forever Evil, Lex Luthor kicks him out of a helicopter.
Okay.
But other than that, yeah, you didn't hear too much about it. But I liked it, though. I did. I think I'm happy I gave this one a try, because I was just like, I didn't with New 52. The series didn't last very long, so I wasn't sure if I was going to pick this one up, and I did, and I was pretty cool with it. So
pretty cool with it.
Pretty cool.
There's a resounding endorsement.
That was pretty cool with it too, Adam.
Good. We're all cool with it.
Dave's not cool with it.
Dave.
I'm cool with it, Adam.
Oh, good. Detective Comics number 939.
Super cool with that.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was really good. That was a good issue.
Tim Drake issue right there.
Yes.
So,
Before we get to what I think you're about to say... Reading that, did anybody have flashbacks of Captain America Civil War? The movie?
No.
Because when they were talking about the drones and all the targets, that's all that kept going through my head was the Hydra, you know, taking out all their threats.
No, I didn't think
okay.
That.
That's what came to my head before he switched. Now, I'm glad they didn't take it out the same way, but
yeah.
To me it was like... kind of seen this before, but I think it sets up, and we talked about this a couple weeks ago that Tim Drake is expendable.
I almost feel like I'm not sure what direction they're going to go with this, because I keep going back to what Josh was saying about Batman Beyond,
mm-hmm.
and I'm like, I feel like that makes sense.
Because I said it.
The only thing that I was looking at, and you know, looking at future covers of Detective, like there's one in previews that has like Stephanie Brown, she's like pointing at Batman like,
yeah,
like she's mad at
him. You let him,
that was my yogurt.
Yeah. That could be all
it was in the fridge.
That could be all, it was in the Batcave. And yeah, but I don't know, I don't think this seems too easy, you know what I mean?
Like, next issue's going to open up and just be a bunch of bullet holes.
bullet hole in his head. I'm just like, okay, never mind.
Wow.
That was dumb, Tim.
That was dumb. And Batman will just be like, remember when that happened? I mean, what was he thinking? You know?
Yeah.
I don't know. It was really good.
I didn't understand why he gave him the target that he gave. The drones.
Why he didn't just like at crash first, them into the well, ocean or something?
He said he couldn't do that. He said he had to give them a target.
Oh yeah.
But
I'd have given him the airship. Kane's dad's.
Yeah, that's what I thought when he said it first. Like, the airship, obviously, and it wasn't the airship. And I was like, okay.
He almost looks like he's showing off. Like, yeah, I can take all of these drones.
Hubris
or Ulysses. Mm. Not Marvel Ulysses. DC Ulysses.
This has just been a bit good book. Like, it just... Detective
New 52, I think Detective was started in, like, it struggled for a while, and I think this one just started off really well.
I like the stuff where they were at Bruce's parents' funeral, between him and,
yeah,
Kate.
That was really cool. I like how they're exploring that a little bit, because, like, I don't think they did too much at all beforehand, that, you know, her relationship with Bruce. You knew it was there, but you never went into the past a little bit to see that.
Yeah. And that's the whole thing, is that at the end of the day, they are blood related.
Yeah. And I've kind of been interested in that those two families, because they're like, they feud, and it's always kind of been like that, and it's just kind of interesting to see two sides of this doing kind of the same thing. You know, they both become vigilantes. One is inspired by the other, you know. But they both do things in their own ways. And I think that's what's interesting about the character. When this character first came out, I wasn't really interested, because I was thinking more how I see with Marvel of, well, we need an opposite, like with Spider-Gwen. And I was just like, well, if you have this, we need to get, you know, we have to have a Batwoman.
She-Hulk.
You know, but if you go back in Batman history, this Batwoman character has been there for a while, and originally it was a cane.
Yeah.
I don't remember it being this particular one. They go into this, into Grant Morrison's story a little bit too, her. But it's just, it's interesting how they're tapping into this, and, you know, this character has been just an interesting character of who she is and what she is. And I think that was a lot of the upset when they decided not to do the wedding.
Yeah.
In the book, that I was just like, seriously, just do it. Because this book had such a niche audience that it, you know, that's who you were talking to. Don't worry about what everything else. This is a little bit separate. And I don't think they need to take it that way.
Yeah.
So.
I've said this before. If you're playing someone else's sandbox, you got to play by their rules. But. Hold on, before you. Batwoman is a character that I don't think would have upset the apple cart too much. I mean,
I agree.
You know my opinion. If you're going to hire these creators, then let them tell their story. Otherwise, just get whatever, you know, Joe Blow schmuck off the street and say, this is the story I'm going to tell with my sandbox.
Right, but that's. I understand that. This is not the character, though, that's going to upset the balance of the New 52, because you let this character.
If you do it, if
what balance did they have in the New 52?
Well, no, but I mean, if you would have
said, if you take Superman,
you
bring her back with Lois Lane, what was the point of doing that to begin with?
Yeah, yeah.
And
but this doesn't.
But
it didn't matter
with her. Yeah, it doesn't make any difference. Also, to go with what Josh was saying about, you know, if you're going to bring somebody to let them tell their story. The thing about it was the story was continuing even before New 52 with this character. They should have just left it alone, because this, like Green Lantern, this book, New 52 didn't affect Batwoman.
Because it didn't affect Batman.
It was continuing from when it was in Detective Comics, before New 52. So they could have just left that alone and dealt with it.
Yeah, like I agree. You could say, listen, we don't want to rehash, you know, what we just had in before this relaunch. We don't want to immediately have Superman and Lois Lane be back together, you know, those sorts of things. But other than that, tell the story they want to tell.
Exactly. Then don't get in the way of it. I mean, if there's a really good reason why you're wanting to do it, why get in the way of it, you know? Why get in the way of this character, because they had a good story to tell?
Especially how much
good
press.
And you're just going to be like, no, we can't because of this little reason.
They're getting so much good
reason.
Press because of the fact that she was this, you know,
strong
LGBTQ character with a, you know, relationship in the book, with a great creative team on the book, and then to just do that just for
now,
the sake of
originally
saying.
Originally, when that story came out, they said that they were just like, that everybody was just like, DC doesn't want this. And it wasn't the fact that they didn't want this this marriage to happen. It was the fact that they didn't want it for the reason of everybody wasn't allowed to. But it turned into
worse,
and they should have known it was going to do that, you know, in this day and age. It's just going to happen.
Animal Man was married.
Yeah. And they didn't mess with that
again,
one at all.
Again, that's another one, though. That's not going to upset the apple cart. You're not. So what?
But it just reinforces
But my thing is,
well, no, but then
neither one of them would.
Yeah.
Why is this one okay, but this one isn't?
But that one isn't. Yeah. It just, yeah, it's just, and then having the relationship between Wonder Woman and that right after this, it's just like, I know they didn't get married, but come on, that's splitting hairs. You know?
They kissed in the clouds.
Yeah. Jesus. I mean, it was close to something, you know. But I don't know. But I feel like they're getting back to the character, though, this Batwoman character a little bit. Maybe they'll now, with Rebirth and, you know, reading the Rebirth book, the first issue of that, and they said they were going back to marriages, you know, with Green Arrow and stuff. Maybe they'll... But the creator's gone.
They don't have... yes,
that was no. Wanting to do that story, so they don't have wait for that.
They don't have a choice.
What?
Because if they don't let it happen now, they can't fall back on the position of,
I'm sure it'll happen.
Editorial guidance was none of them can
get. But the story we had that we were going to get, we'll never see.
If they were to do that right now, then they would get the kind of press like, oh, now DC's just going to try to like act like everything is okay.
Yeah.
I mean, they've got to let it flow naturally. Yeah, organically happen. But you can't.
Yeah.
You know, at this point, if they said, no, we're not going to let it happen, now you know it's a little more than just editorial, you know, saying no one can be married. There's something else going on. And you know, they may not want bad press because, you know, there are groups out there, oh, you can't have gay and lesbian marriages. Okay, fine, but now you're going to have the opposite problem.
This is my opinion, not Colin's opinion or Pittsburgh Comics. Those groups are stupid.
I don't disagree.
I agree. Let's see. The last one I'll talk about is Generation Zero.
Generation Zero?
I really like this one.
I thought you were about to say you didn't like it.
I know, I did that. but...
I liked it, but...
Yeah, no, I really did like it. Even though I didn't know anything about the Harbinger characters, I was still able to get into this book. So I thought they did a really great job doing that.
If you want a quick refresh on these characters, just read the Harbinger Wars.
Yeah, that was in that. That's series. Yeah, and that's something I do want to read because I remember it was mentioned a little bit in Archer and Armstrong, that Bloodshot tie-in that they had. That was mentioned in there. But yeah, just now there's some things I didn't necessarily know. Maybe you can clear this up. This futuristic city that they live in. Now, where did this come from? Is this new?
That's new to me.
Okay, so that's...
Unless I'm forgetting something, that's new to me.
Okay, so... but this futuristic city is kind of... it seems kind of fishy to begin with when you're there. Just everything is just kind of perfect there. And it almost seems a little too perfect. There's this mystery surrounding... I forget the character's name. The girl who's in this. Her boyfriend, who is killed in a car accident that they think is brought upon by drunk driving, and then she figures out that it had nothing to do with drunk driving at all because he didn't drink or anything like that. So she has a little bit of suspicion behind that, and she goes online. I don't remember how she heard about this though. How that she heard that she can contact. I think that in this they called them the Zeros, and she was able to contact them through like a video chat like type thing, almost like a bulletin board type thing, and leave her kind of story behind this, and then basically they pick it up on that end if they want to investigate it or not. And some of them were kind of dumb.
Yeah, there are tons of requests for their help.
Yeah.
And they go to the ones that interest them.
Like, there was one girl who was, like, cutting herself, and she's just like, this is what it feels like when they bully me or something, and this and that. And they just kept going through them, and then they got to hers. And some of the characters were really interesting. Not just some of the side characters. Like, the little brother who you think is using a spirograph the whole time, and then it turns out he forgot his spirograph when they moved there, and he'd just been doing that just... on his own, without one.
Because he thinks that they'll protect him.
Yeah, from... he was protecting him. What was it to protect him from? I forget what they were calling him. I don't remember now. But, yeah, something was after him. And then her best friend is in a wheelchair.
and just everybody else is kind of these rich kids who their parents are kind of the higher ups of the city. And she's invited to a party, and she goes to it, and she runs into some kids there who she's never seen before, but she talks to them for a little bit. She walks off because she's investigating more about her boyfriend's death. She's investigating because she gets a mail of a CD that I think it was an audio CD that she listened to in her car from her boyfriend before he died. And he says, I was investigating this, go look into this or something like that. She goes and looks into it, and she's kind of attacked by, I can't really explain what they are exactly. Like, they seem like they're almost like a machine, aren't they? The characters that are kind of after her.
Yeah, they look almost like robotic zombies.
Yeah. Kinda. And when they do, while she's trying to get away from them, the Zeros, it turns out the kids that she was talking about before are the Zeros, well, part of them. And they came to help her deal with this situation. But it was good. Really good. I enjoyed it.
I like that this girl was really kind of the star of the book.
Yeah.
That the Generation Zero kids, they were almost just kind of like teased a bit throughout it. Mm-hmm. And then you see them at the end, but it kind of built up to their appearance, which is a neat way of doing it.
But, I liked it. I was happy I liked it because this is one, like, being that it's written by Fred Van Lente, I wanted to pick it up. And I enjoyed it. Even though, like, my main concern was, would I enjoy it knowing about these characters? And that was not a problem. So people have been coming into the store asking about it, and I told them that was their concern too. And I told them, I said, really, I enjoyed it without knowing anything about them.
Mm-hmm.
It just made me more interested.
Yeah, you didn't need to have any background on them to.
But I think Valiant is just really good at that.
They're very good at making things accessible.
Yes. So, pick this book up. I enjoyed it. I'm kind of more interested now in the this next wave that's coming out after this.
Even if you had like followed things and knew who these characters were, I mean, that Harbinger Wars story was years ago at this point, so it's not like it was, you know,
it's not going to change any, you know.
But I mean, even if someone read it, you hadn't really seen these characters in a while anyways.
Yeah.
So, I mean, some of you did. You saw Animalia in the Harbinger book, but some of these other ones you really didn't see a whole lot since then.
Okay. But yeah, that's it.
Okay. Titans.
I read Titans.
So,
I thought it was all right.
Yeah, has not been my favorite of the Rebirth books, but it was okay. Abracadabra creates fake Titans. Mm. I guess that, you know, that's the best way to describe them. And Linda Park finds Wally West, but doesn't quite know who he is.
Like, she knows who Kid Flash is.
Right, but it doesn't quite. And he is in a different costume now than he was before, and I think that that's.
I like his new costume. I'm surprised. I mean, it's not that different from. It's like a mixture of Flash and Kid Flash.
It's the same thing, it's just red.
Yeah.
Knowing the history, sometimes it's just like, all right, we know what's going to happen here. We know what the inevitable is. Just get them together and let's be done with it. Let's figure it out. I was a little shocked. There's a character that was potentially killed at the end of this book, and it seems early to start killing off characters.
Yeah, I don't think that person is going to be dead. I have a feeling they're not, but if they are, it is kind of early.
Yeah, it just seemed like, you know, to tease something like that.
Yeah, although that does, you know,
it certainly ups the stakes.
It shows you mean business about whatever the story is.
Yeah, and Abracadabra is not exactly a villain you would normally take seriously.
Yeah, like I want to like this book a lot because this book I feel is closest to the main Rebirth story. In terms of, even with like how Abracadabra is saying, you know, oh, he's not supposed to be here. He's not supposed to be in this you know time frame or whatever. Right. Like you can sense there's something else tying, you know, this book to the greater mystery of Rebirth, which is interesting, but. Yeah, it hasn't been as overwhelming of a success as some of these other books so far. Yeah. It's not bad. By no means is it bad. It's just, it's kind of, you know, right in the middle.
It may also be because this one's actually shipping once a month.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're used to, well, most of these titles getting two books a month and kind of progressing the story faster.
Yeah, these books have been feeling like things are moving very quickly. So it does stand out with the ones that or shipping once a month.
But it was fine. But it didn't, you know, knock my socks off by any stretch of the imagination. Flip side of that would be Action Comics. I really enjoyed this issue.
Yeah, this has been a really good book in general.
So, you know, Superman has been fighting Doomsday, and He finds a way to get rid of Doomsday, which, quite clever. Send him to the Phantom Zone.
Yeah.
There's a problem, though. He's intercepted.
By the mysterious Mr. Oz. I like that this is setting up this really big mystery, this story that they want to tell. I wasn't thrilled in the beginning to see Doomsday as a threat, because I feel like we just had Doomsday not too long ago. A bit too much with the Doomsday and
the movie.
Yeah, and it felt that the stories in Action and the story in Superman were a bit too parallel.
Yeah, there were times where I wasn't sure if like, I was reading Action or Superman.
Both times they're fighting this threat that could possibly kill Superman, and both times they have to go off world at some point.
Make sure you're protecting John and all this and stuff.
But no, it was good, and to see that, you know, Mr. Oz intercepts him and wants to harness Doomsday as a weapon. I'm definitely, like, all in on this mystery of who, you know, Mr. Oz is and what his agenda is.
I thought it was really interesting that he was able to intercept something going through the Phantom Zone, which means, like, you'd have to be somebody who understood the Phantom Zone. Like, not a lot of people from Earth or somewhere else would have known, unless they're Kryptonian. About the Phantom Zone. So,
well, but again, if he's who we think he is...
It's possible, yeah.
Yeah.
But I was even thinking of somebody who could have already been in the Phantom Zone. But I don't want that, because, like, we kind of know a lot of the villains from the Phantom Zone. Yeah,
Ursula.
And you don't want any of that, you know? Yeah. So it's just like, that would be too generic. So, yeah, it was a good issue. It was a really good issue. I like this one just, and this isn't the last issue of this arc yet either, is it? Because I didn't think it said it was complete.
Yeah, I think this was the last issue of the arc.
Path to Doom Part 6, in the epic conclusion, the mystery of Black Zero deepens.
Must be Superman, that's not over.
No, I think Superman ended too.
I thought both those arcs wrapped up.
Because he defeated Eradicator.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he did, that's right. Yeah, I don't remember. I don't know what I'm talking about.
No one knows.
Yeah. Something. Who knows?
No one.
Derp.
Pudding.
Yeah.
Pudding? Is pudding at this podcast?
Oh, yeah.
There could be.
Hey, Brandon.
Right there.
I'll hook you up, Adam.
All right. So, next. Wonder Woman.
I read and enjoyed Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
I liked it. I'm liking Year One more than this.
I was just going to bring this up because I've been reading that a lot online. That the reviews for this book, a lot of people are saying that they like Year One, but they're not getting into the other story.
I think this issue was slow. It made me say in a series, not enough has happened yet.
Yeah, not a lot happened in it. But I'm
interested in where it's going because there's stuff that's being brought up. Like, they're like, who is this? Like, who is the Swamp Thing looking guy? Like, what is he? What, you know, things that I'm wanting to know. So I'm kind of more interested in
the
future.
Yeah, they haven't progressed the story that quickly, but I feel like where the book, this arc has really excelled are the, like, conversations between different characters. Like with her and Cheetah.
Yeah.
You know, Trevor and his captors and a Candy. Like, a lot of really cool interactions.
Yeah.
It's a slow burn, but I definitely am on board with where they're taking it.
I am too.
The art's been fantastic on both sides.
I do like the year one story, though, but the thing about it is, like, some of it we already kind of know. So it's, I feel like this one's giving us, like, something new.
I feel like that year one story is going to start to take a turn, though.
Yeah. But, both, like, I just like the book. Like, I do. I'm happy there's a Wonder Woman book that I'm picking up again.
Yeah.
Because I really did like the Azzarello run.
Mm-hmm.
And, I'm happy that there's something now I'm picking this book up again. Because I like the character. I've always liked the character of Wonder Woman.
Well, I think the other thing, I'm assuming that what we're seeing in year one is the truth. So, whatever we end up seeing throughout year one,
mm-hmm.
you know, assumingly, you know, for the first 12 issues, whatever, or first 24 issues, that is what her truth is, whereas the other arc, the lies arc, is essentially running in parallel where she's trying to discover
I have a feeling both of these are going to kind of.
I
think
that's the
point of doing this, really.
But I like how they're doing it, and that it's essentially it's almost like getting two Wonder Woman
books. Some organization,
to
it. But it has been good.
Yep.
Flash.
I like this issue quite a bit.
It threw me, because certain people were together when actions were taking place.
I know,
place.
And I like that, because if, unless there's some wacky twist, if that holds true, then what...
Not wacky race.
Not wacky race.
If that holds true, that certain people were in certain places that prevented from doing certain things, then that means the obvious direction that we
Godspeed is not who we thought he was, or she was, or they were.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah, the obvious answer to that is not the actual answer.
The only thing the only thing that threw me for that was the fact
done better.
That Godspeed was intangible. So I thought, well, does that mean that maybe that version of Godspeed that showed up?
Well, keep in mind...
Was not Godspeed, but was a Speed Force replicant.
Remnant.
They're remnant.
Time
remnant.
Keep in mind, we're finding out that all these new Speedsters have unique power sets.
Yes.
So that projection could also be some other ability that we don't know about yet.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting with this book how they've thrown so many new characters into this, which makes it a little more difficult to say who is it. Now, two of them have become more main characters, the girl
August
who's running his name, and they're, I think, the characters that they want you to think it is. I think it's going to be somebody else later on, but it's just, you don't know. Like, I think they've just put so many out there with these powers that you're just like, you can't guess right now of who it is.
Yeah.
Or who it could end up being. So
it's Gorilla Grodd.
I mean, it could still be.
He's been working
on
his character.
It could be.
Like, it could be an elaborate ruse, but
yeah.
It definitely is no longer predictable.
Yes.
That.
Yeah. So I did enjoy.
Which
it
I guess
for
means
that,
it wasn't predictable in the first place, because what we predicted did not happen.
Yeah.
Touche, Josh Williamson. Touche.
Batgirl.
I like this book.
I thought it was okay. There were parts of it where it got a little CW on it, but I was like, eh, whatever. But it didn't, wasn't like...
I know what you're talking about. Like, there were part, like, with her inner monologue about the relationship stuff and his, how he was talking. But I felt they did a good job depicting that actual scenario, where you have this, budding initial like attraction or relationship, and one person is way too fast, like fully into it, like, oh, I see a future together, and the other one's kind of like,
dude, it's been a little bit too.
Like, the way that the dialogue went, it never felt cheesy to me like CW did. Okay. And it felt like an accurate depiction of that, yeah, you know, awkward college years kind of thing, post college years.
Okay, that's fair enough.
If she had like gone fully for it, then I would have been like, this is kind of lame. But this book is definitely focusing more on Barbara Gordon, the character, than Batgirl, the character, which I like.
Yeah. It's only two issues in, so I guess it's hard to, you know, I don't want to judge it too early, but when I see things like that, I start to think, okay, what is the target audience for this? Because if it's going to be that kind of comic where it's, you know, the trials and tribulations of a young 20-year-old who, you know.
I don't think it is.
Batgirl by night.
I think sometimes, that adds, because I think that's why I've always liked Spider-Man, because of the story going on more with Peter Parker. Mm-hmm. And I think that sometimes makes it a little more interesting. How does this character deal with living this extra life and then the background and then keep relationships?
That's fine. I can relate to Peter Parker. Mm. I was a nerd that no girl would talk to in high school. I get that. I'm not the 20-something girl from Burnside. I can't relate to her.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
I wouldn't call that a problem.
Well, no. I mean, that's the problem for me. To why I would continue getting.
But I mean, I'm sure there are plenty of people out there that say they couldn't relate to Peter Parker.
No, yeah. I agree with that, and that's fine. But
I feel like this book is incorporating a lot of different elements. Like you have that, depiction of this you know whirlwind relationship that we saw. We have the globe turning aspect. We see her trying to figure out this mystery and follow this path that Fruit Bat, you know, kind of set her on.
Yeah.
You know, we're seeing a little bit of the action with the MMA fights. So, I mean, I feel like this book is doing several things and not just going, you know, whole hog into the teen, young 20-year-old drama.
No, and that's fine. That's the only thing I'm leery about with this book, mm-hmm. but it's only two issues in. Yeah. So,
you know,
not...
sometimes, though, with some of these, like, I don't necessarily want to necessarily relate with the character. I just find it interesting, you know, of what she's dealing with in her life. I think that's more why, like, maybe, and I get what you're saying. That's fine.
Yeah, but I'm going to put him out. I don't care about it.
You don't care what's going on there. Yeah, I just find it an interesting story. Like, this is what's happening to this character because of, you know, this or something like that. I just kind of, I don't know. Sometimes I find that interesting. Necessarily relating to him, which I get with Peter Parker. That's probably a little bit why I've got into it, was you could relate to that character a little bit. With Barbara Gordon, maybe not so much, but I just find those backstories kind of interesting more than sometimes what she's doing as Batgirl. Then how that all ties together.
Mm-hmm. Well, but the other thing, though, that I get... Birds of Prey is a Batgirl book.
Yeah.
So if Batgirl becomes the Barbara Gordon book... That kind of makes my choice easy.
Birds of Prey is a Batgirl book right now.
Right. No, and and that's what I'm saying. If that's how it's going to run, that's fine. Then I know which book I would read and which one I won't.
Well, I think, you know what? I think that was their plan, though, of bringing that book out.
The difference is, though, that Birds of Prey has awful art.
Yes.
So, that's...
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think their plan was to bring out a book that one audience might relate to better than the other audience.
And
not necessarily think that they'd get both. They can.
I shouldn't say off art. Just the way Barbara Gordon is drawing her face. Like I said before, the rest of the art I thought was fine. It was just Barbara Gordon's face looks wacky every single...
She's got a wacky face.
Yeah, every single panel, it's different.
I'll tell you, wacky's the word.
Wacky podcast.
Thanks, Wacky Erasland.
Next, Hal Jordan.
We've just been using it.
Green
so
Lantern Corps.
I like that.
I thought it was okay.
I feel like every single book. I like that. Yeah, it's okay.
Whatever. Well, I'll tell you what I disliked about it. The first two pages dealt with a guy,
mm-hmm.
and then it was just forgotten about.
There's less of heaven with Hal.
Yeah, but I felt like that went on. way too... Like, there was like 6 pages of the Yellow Lantern's power growing and growing and growing and him being subdued. Cut that down to 3 pages and show me what's going on.
I feel like they were trying to build it up a bit more like emotional tension, especially, you know, when you're seeing like him use his like more powerful abilities. Can't save the kid after he was just like, I'll save everyone. No one's gonna, you know, die.
He just can't.
And reaching out for the kid, and he still, like, even after that last, you know, ditch hurrah, still can't do it. And left laying there unconscious as, you know, they report back to Sinestro, we got him. I get what they were doing, like the build up to that, and for me it worked.
I'm becoming more impatient. That's the problem. You know, most people get older and they get more patient. I become more impatient. I want to see what's going on with God. And maybe it's because the first panel where you see him and you know, he's in a fight and he's bloody and all that. And I'm like, okay,
I want to see what's going on. I feel like with the double shipping, though, they can get away with doing that. They can get away with having, you know, a tease of him and not showing the rest of the issue. As long as next issue he's not completely forgotten about again.
If the Green Lantern Corps was all together, I probably would be okay with that. But think about it, we've gone the last year without there really being a Green Lantern Corps.
There's a Corps. There's
they weren't there. They were, you know, they were off in an alternate dimension or an alternate timeline or whatever the Lost Corps was. You know, they need to link back up. Even if it, you know, it's almost like The Walking Dead TV show. It's like, okay, just tell your story. Don't have them keep separating, coming together.
Well, see, I don't know. I feel like this, what they're doing right now, is interesting. Like, I'm interested to see them trying to figure out where they're at and get things back up and running with the core. The core getting their operations back
and running. That, to me, would even be a more interesting story.
But I'm also interested in seeing Hal take on the entire Yellow Lantern Corps and try and solve the mystery of where they're at. I guess, to me, I feel like once they're back together and they set up shop as the guardians of the police force of the universe, then it's just back to business as usual, which you can tell good stories, but this, to me, is interesting.
Well, yeah, but I think that's the whole thing. Hal is not going to overcome the entire Yellow Lantern Corps by himself.
Obviously not, but to still see, you know, how the story unfolds, because now he's going to be taken back to Sinestro, and I imagine we're going to see some interplay between those two characters, which is always,
that's always good.
To see what's behind the whole Yellow Lanterns being able to massively overcharge their power rings. Like, I feel like there's lots of little mysteries being set up.
Yeah, that's definitely true. They're supposed to instill fear, and they're feeding off the fear.
I completely get, you know, wanting to see the core back in its rightful spot. The core has been, you know, off somewhere else for quite a while now, and Venditti's moving back towards that of getting the core, you know, in the rightful place. But I feel like if they did it quickly, then it would just seem like a quick retcon. Where this way, I feel like we're getting an interesting story out of it. It's building up to, you know, them eventually being back. And for what it's worth, in the previews, we see they're back in a few issues anyways.
I know that they will get, because it's Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps. I know that they
have, like, the preview says in there, like, now that the Corps is back.
What the hell's going on with Guy? I want to see that. That's the other thing. I mean, Guy was in Red Lanterns for how long? Like, I mean, he hasn't really been a part of the Green Lantern Corps for...
Since early New 52.
Yeah. So, what, you know, I want to see that get back. And that's, you know...
He was one of the main characters in the Green Lantern Corps in New 52. Him and John Stewart.
It was
like a team out.
Yeah, it was him and John Stewart's book. And then when Hal Jordan came... When Hal Jordan became the leader of the Green Lanterns, he asked him to go spy on the Reds for him, and then it took that path. Which, by the way, I love that story, too, where you had him in charge of the Reds.
Yeah.
But, you know, now...
Then Charles Soule signed on with Marvel.
Yeah. How'd that work out?
Fantastic.
The three copies of Inhumans being sold.
Daredevil. It's been okay.
It's been okay. Not wacky, just okay.
It's not wacky.
So, yeah, that's all I got. Go ahead, Josh.
Maybe a little wacky.
All right. Adam, did you read Rye?
Yes.
Number 16. So this is the last of the Rye 4001 AD tie-ins. I'm pretty sure this is the final issue of Rye for a while as well.
I feel like it is. I mean, the way it ended with the beginning or something like that.
Yeah. So this issue, we see the current Rye, his kind of origin with his mom, and him, you know, taking over as father's, you know, enforcer on New Japan. Now we find out that a previous Rai that was thought to be, you know, extinguished is still around in a very, looks very like elderly state almost.
Because I guess they can age, because that's what they showed. They age a little slower. Yeah.
And leading to some sort of confrontation, which now I wonder, is this who we saw Rai meet down on the planet?
Oh.
Because that looked like just a version of the current Rai.
I don't think it was. I think that was a different one. I was wondering that, too. This one was just the one from the
one with the like Azrael.
Because I don't remember him. Well, he can't be because of what happened in this issue.
Yeah, I guess.
So there was like another. It's just interesting how there's so many different types, and they're not all called Rai. I find that kind of interesting.
Yeah, I thought at one point they were referred to as like they were Rai, but they had individual names as well. Like Father still referred to them as, you know, Rai, I thought.
Well, the girl was named Sai, which I guess maybe they could have like taken on their. But even it like just seems a little out of character. For
whenever
them to
Father
that.
Banished Rai to Earth after the Rai's initial uprising, and made that new Rai that Father himself inhabited, it was
he
like
called it
Rai 9 or whatever it was.
Yeah,
like he was incrementing them.
It was 10 because he had it was 11. He had an X and an I on his face, and they he called him that. But yeah, they never did call him Rai. They gave him a different name. So yeah, huh?
But I thought in earlier issues, like in one of the previous issues that showed with the other versions, I thought at one point Father referred to them as, even though they had their individual name, I thought he referred to them as Rai at some point too.
Yeah,
I don't know. Regardless,
I like one thing I liked about this issue is just how it tied the first issue altogether. I just thought it was a really...
Oh, you mean the very first issue of the series?
Yeah. How it ends, how it says the beginning, but it was the beginning of the series of Rai.
Yeah, with the murder of the
mom. It explains
mom.
How it happened and how this other older Rai was...
The one that...
Yeah. Put it all together. It was really well done. And how they just kept the Rai series going on with 4001 AD doing this, I think it just added so much to the story itself. Which, again, Valiant does a very good job of having tie-ins that matter.
Yeah.
Where other companies don't. They're just there because. These make you know, they're for a reason. With 4001 AD continuing where Rai left off at that point, you kind of wondered, well, what are they going to do with the Rai storyline? I think they just reinforced, you know, the story more. And, it was really good. I really liked the one before that, dealing with the first one that they brought out from this tie-in that was with the kid.
Oh, yeah, that one's really good.
That was probably
the best.
And then they had this one, the one before this was a... was like a two-parter. It was dealing with the girl, and then they go after her. And then they fell in love, and then, you know, then it leads off with this one. They just, how they connect, it's kind of neat. But yeah, it was really good. Really good issue. I'm going to read 4001 AD when I get home, because I can't wait to read that book.
Same here.
Yes.
Lucifer, number 9?
Yeah, I read that.
So this is good. This is leads up to the fight for the throne of hell. We have Lucifer's son, who's kind of the champion, battling for, you know, the rights to hell. But we find out that he's not really there to fight for hell. He's there to try and take on his father and avenge the deaths of his brother, because his father, Lucifer, killed his brothers, you know, long ago.
Yeah.
So he's just, he's there to try and get the Queen of Hell to, you know, look to Lucifer, and then from there he, you know, drastically transforms and takes the attack to Lucifer instead.
Yeah, it's a unique design.
Yeah, it looked like he had a giant vagina on his chest.
Yeah.
Whoa.
That's wacky.
Like, he looked like a blob with a giant vagina on his chest. That's, I can't think of a better way to describe it.
That's pretty accurate, yeah.
Yeah. But it was good. Like, I liked... I there was a lot of just conversations in this issue.
Mm-hmm.
But it worked well. Like, I felt like there was a lot of subtlety in the conversations, where there was a lot more behind the scenes, you know, going on and implied than was actually being said. It implied a whole lot of, like, history there between these.
Yeah, and sometimes I feel like I'm missing... Because, like, I never read Sandman. I never read the original Lucifer. So sometimes I feel like I'm missing bits and pieces of this.
Yeah.
You still be able to follow it, but it's like... Is there a history here I'm supposed to know, or...
Yeah. But, no, it was pretty good. I've enjoyed this book quite a bit. And I think the art's been fantastic.
Oh, yeah. It is beautifully drawn and colored.
Yeah. Hellblazer, number one. Any of you guys read that?
Mm-hmm.
No. So, this picks up right where the Rebirth issue left off, with John getting back into London. We have Swamp Thing here. We see Swamp Thing coming to collect on a debt. So, Swamp Thing helped Constantine, you know, get back to London and helped him with the curse. So we now see Constantine having to, you know, make good on a deal he made in helping Swamp Thing find Abigail Arcane, because she has just, you know, disappeared. And it references things that happened in the New 52 with the whole Rot World crossover story, which is kind of cool. But it was good. I'm not loving this so far. It definitely feels more like a Vertigo book than the previous one. I love Swamp Thing in this issue. There's a really cool panel where he pops up in a fruit stand in New York to talk to Constantine, and it mentions that in New York there's not a whole lot of places that Swamp Thing can really, you know, make himself present, aside from like Times Square. So it was neat seeing all these pieces of fruit, and then one that's just shaped like Swamp Thing's head start talking to Constantine. The art I'm a bit iffy on. Some panels are fine. Some panels look a bit out of whack, especially with Constantine's face. Not as bad as Batgirl and the Birds of Prey is, but it's, you know, I don't hate it. I don't love it. It's just kind of in the middle. I think it's more tat that's on the... on art for this. But if you like the Vertigo Constantine, the Vertigo Hellblazer books, then it's definitely worth checking. I think Colin was liking this more than I was. I'm still going to check it out for a few more issues and see if it picks up. Because I do like the Swamp Thing aspect of it, and it looks like Swamp Thing's in there for the foreseeable future. But overall, not bad. Faith, number two. Adam, you're not reading that, are you?
Faith. I'm thinking of picking up that series because I enjoyed the character so much in Archer and Armstrong that I'm thinking I want to pick this up.
It's fun. So this, in the first issue, she encounters her arch nemesis in on the West Coast, in L.A., I believe she's in. Yeah. And her arch nemesis is this big-time movie star who's played superheroes on screen, and she thinks she's going there just for a photo shoot, But he ends up drugging her and capturing her and just says, you know, you've just met your new arch nemesis. And this picks up where she is being held captive, and he's using this anti-psyot tech to suppress her powers. And he plans on killing her, but he wants to make sure that everything is filmed and everyone knows that he's one that did it, to try and, you know, make himself that, you know, this super villain character. And we find out, because she is, you know, still, like, thinking, is this a prank? Is this some sort of, you know, PR stunt? Because she's been a huge fangirl of this character in his superhero movies. We find out that he kind of fell into the roles of the superhero characters, but that's never what he wanted to do. He was always a fan of the villains and decided he would try and go into acting to play those villain characters, and that's how he would, you know, relate to those, you know, these characters he grew up loving. But because he had these, you know, like, boy next door looks, he could never be cast as the villain. He was always cast as a superhero, and he hated it. And he hated that people, you know, kept looking at him as he's this hero, and he never asked for that. And he would tell stories about how he loved comic books, and people always assumed it was the heroes that he liked. So this is his way of trying to, you know, finally become this supervillain. But he falls in all these supervillain tropes, and he's going through his long, you know, monologues and all this exposition. Yeah. And while he's doing that, she, you know, finds a way to escape and injures him in the process. And we see this whole big swarm of stunt doubles that he has worked with over the years that are now his henchmen that come out. And she managed to fend them off, and he gets locked up all in this issue. But then there's a twist, and we see that there's more of a long con going on. And the guy that she's actually fighting may not have been the actual movie star, but which is another one of the stuntmen, and the actual movie star who wants to become the supervillain is plotting something even bigger. Huh. So it's kind of cool. It's kind of a neat thing they're doing with this book. But
it fits her character.
It does. Fits her character very well, yeah. And the last one I mentioned is Deathstroke, number one. And you guys read Deathstroke?
No.
So this is the same thing as the Rebirth issue, where we're seeing flashbacks to Deathstroke's past. We saw him rescue Wintergreen in the previous issue, who had been captive for, looked like, a year. And we see Deathstroke playing multiple sides in this book. So he helps out this warlord by working to get this congressman reelected who has been blocking intervention in the warlord's country. But at the same time, he also sets up a blackmail, or sets up someone to blackmail this congressman, which results in a congressman killing himself. So he's trying to play both sides of the fence. We see much more of an anti-hero Deathstroke in this. As he's rescuing Wintergreen doesn't realize he's actually being rescued, because he says he's vision or had this daydream, you know, several times over the course of the past year. And then when he finally, you know, realized that it's actually happening, he kind of, you know, flips on Slade a bit, you know, wondering why he hasn't come to rescue him over the entire time he's been there. And it just, he thought he was off golfing somewhere, just enjoying the good life. The best part about this, though, I think, is the backstory we're getting. We're seeing Slade Wilson's, you know, family life with his kids, with his ex-wife, the really kind of messed up relationship they had. And the way they do it, again, is just throughout the whole issue, they do these little flashbacks, which I think tie in a bit to what's currently going on in the present story and gives it a bit more impact, I guess. But so far, two issues in, I've really enjoyed this book. So if you're a fan of Deathstroke or like the anti-hero characters, I would definitely check it out. And that's it for me.
Okay, that completes the review. That completes the review portion of the podcast. So I hope the listeners were encouraged to pick something up that sounds interesting to them.
He is more excited than
this
Colin.
This is the most formative podcast I've ever been.
And even if you're not, even if we didn't particularly like something, just pick it up anyhow.
Yeah, just do it.
Give your money to Carlin.
Give it to me. I'll take it.
So
did he? Well, I guess he didn't highlight what's coming out next week. But there's books coming out next week.
Yeah, you know, he might have. I just didn't get the list.
Oh, way to be prepared.
I forgot about it. It's probably buried under here.
What's that?
Talk about where they can find us.
You could find Colin on the web at pittsburghcomics.com, on Twitter at pghcomics. I believe Instagram is also at pghcomics. Is that correct?
I believe so.
Yeah, on Facebook.
You would think by now you would know that after he says
he doesn't use the he doesn't put I don't, I don't too much stuff he doesn't, on Instagram.
Yeah, he just puts covers on there sometimes.
I don't listen to what Colin's saying.
And nobody else does.
Yeah. And now Adam's back with the list that's coming out next week.
Awesome.
So, next week, we have ANA number 7. We have All New, All Different Avengers number 14. Alters number 1. Aquaman number 6. Is Alters something you're paying?
No, I was just going to... Alters is getting some... it's about a transgender hero. That's getting a lot of play in the... In the more wide media, yeah.
Huh.
That's from Aftershock.
Batman number 6. There's the Batman hardcover volume 9, Bloom.
Okay.
That might complete that, I guess. Because that arc didn't last very long. We have Cyborg Rebirth number 1. Eclipse number 1. Ever After from the Pages of Fables number 1. Mm-hmm. Flintstones number 3. Glitter Bomb number 1, Great Divide number 1, Green Arrow number 6, Harley Quinn number 3, Invincible Iron Man 13, Jughead number 9. Is there anything new happening with Jughead? New writer or anything?
Yes, I think this
one gets a writer change.
Chip Zdarsky left. I guess this is the first one with a new writer.
I think it is.
I don't know if his name is Derek North, or I probably shouldn't say that. I'm like,
it's the guy who was doing Adventure Time for a while. I just can't remember his name. Oh, yeah, okay. It's North. His name is
okay, North. Okay, I was right. Okay, good.
Kill or Be Killed, number 2, awesome. And he's also getting the second printing next week of number 1.
Yeah,
so anybody who missed
that's
that,
that's a great series.
Mighty Thor number 9. I guess that might be a shortage damage replacement. Moon Knight number 6. Nightwing number 4. Ninjak number 19. Paper Girls number 9. Red One number 3. Rick and Morty Little Poopy Superstar number 2. Rise of the Black Flame number 1. Sheriff of Babylon, number 10. That's Pat's book.
Yep.
Silk, number 12. I didn't even know that was still existing. Skyborn, number 1. Squadron Supreme, number 11. Star Wars, Poe Dameron, number 6. That's everyone's favorite. Supergirl, number 1. Josh, you liked the rebirth of that, didn't you?
I sure did.
There we go. Superman number 6, which Superman has been, I think, a favorite from everyone, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Uncanny X-Men number 12, and The Walking Dead number 158. So that is what is coming out, well, a little bit of what's coming out next week, not everything, but
that's
the highlights of next week. But does anybody else have anything else to say?
Yeah, come here Saturday at noon and see the time capsule.
Right. Yeah, the giant time capsule for the end of 4001 AD.
What do you think it'll be?
It's already been unboxed online.
We won't talk about what people have seen online. Have you seen what it is?
You want the truth?
No. I don't think I do.
Okay, then
I want to be disappointed. I was hoping people had, this is what it could have been,
there's
but you all know.
There's an actual bloodshot head in there.
Ooh.
Is it an Al Capone's vault
What's
situation?
In the box?
Blood squirt is in there.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I think Colin will
like literally
that
a
box
squirt of blood.
He'll cut
it was
kind of
like
paper cut and be blood.
Just a lot of blood. Just blood all in it. It's awful.
Eternal Warrior body parts are in there.
Ooh. We already had enough body parts coming to this store.
Okay.
Bunch of D's.
That's a podcast. We'll talk to you later. See ya.